Aquaculture and You, Creating a Sustainable Resource. A production of the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. Worry-free fish, contaminants, and aquaculture. In previous episodes, we've alluded to the benefits of eating farm-raised fish for many diverse reasons. But what about contaminants that we often hear are contained in fish? Modern-day pollutants are tricky. Often, they're neither visible nor obvious. Many contaminants well known today were only discovered when their harmful effects were observed in people and wildlife, generally in the 1950s and 1960s. Though substances like DDT and PCBs were banned in the US and Canada in the 1970s, they can persist in the environment for a long time. And today, mercury from coal-fired power plants is still dispersed through the atmosphere over very long distances. As a consumer, it can be hard to make sense of this, and the many consumption advisories issued about wild fish over the last several years don't help. In Wisconsin, there have been consumption advisories about walleye in particular. If you like walleye as much as I do, you may be wondering if this fish is possibly suitable for aquaculture, or whether local farm-raised fish are any better for you at all. The subject of mercury in the methylation process is complex, and if you're curious as to why people use mercury, where and in what forms it exists in the environment, and how it came to be recognized as a toxin, I encourage you to seek out our podcast series, Water, Wisconsin, and the Mercury Cycle. But for right now, the question at hand is, how do mercury and other contaminants impact walleye and fish fries? I spoke to several of our specialists about this, and in this episode, Jim Held, Chris Hartlib, and Jim Hurley all weigh in on the topic. I spoke to Jim Hurley over a Friday fish fry, and I was particularly keen for his take on the situation, given his background as an environmental chemist. Also, if you're not sure what a walleye is, they're the largest member of the perch family, are native to the Great Lakes region, and can reach a maximum length of 3 feet and a weight of 25 pounds. They rarely do, though, as they're an extremely popular and feisty sport fish. Because of this, they've been stocked far beyond their original range and are present in roughly 40% of the freshwater habitats in North America. They're called walleye due to their large, opaque eyes, which reflect light in the dark, much like a cat's. Sauger are closely related to walleye and are usually smaller. The two species frequently crossbreed in the wild and create hybrids, sometimes referred to as saugeyes.
Walleye is more of a Wisconsin cult following, I would guess, because of it being a great game fish, especially in the northern lakes, to catch. So the traditional fish fries, and we see it here on the menu in Madison, there's lake perch on the menu, and there's walleye on the menu, and then of course there are some other types of fish, but walleye and lake perch are right there.
There was a certain point when there was a warning put out by the state about consumption of walleye, right?
And that's a definite concern, the types of fish that you're eating, the types of fish that you're served in different restaurants, and then whether or not you're part of a susceptible population. The problem with mercury in fish was one that was a little bit perplexing in Wisconsin, because in the 70s and 80s, we started to find that fish from remote lakes tended to accumulate mercury. We had to try to figure out why that was. Well, we found out that most of that mercury was coming in the rain, some in other types of processes, but it contaminated fish in remote lakes. And the conditions were right for that mercury to accumulate in fish in those northern lakes. So that brought into question whether the fish that you would eat in a restaurant would be similarly contaminated, and it is a definite concern. The fish that we eat in restaurants, lake perch, say, they're a smaller fish. They don't tend to accumulate as much mercury, but much of the lake perch that we get now isn't even from Lake Michigan, and it certainly isn't from the small lakes in Wisconsin. We don't have commercial fisheries on those. Most of them will either come from Canada or come from Lake Erie, where there is a good population. So our supply of local yellow perch is fairly low, and we're going elsewhere to look for it. Walleye, on the other hand, is probably mostly coming from Canada, from large lakes. We don't have much of a commercial fishery here. The walleye that we as Wisconsinites are concerned about are walleye that we catch as game fish, mainly in our northern lakes. So we should be cautious about the types of fish we order. If we're in a restaurant, we ought to ask about where the fish comes from. There's just so much information now online that you can sit at a table when you order your fish fry, take out your iPhone or your PDA, and go to different applications that give you information about the different fish choices that you make.
Another thing that's pretty important as far as fish farming goes is the contaminants that fish contain. It's a big generalization, but most of the fish you eat, whether they come from the ocean or come from farms, are safe to eat. They don't have high levels of mercury and lipophilic organics that tend to deposit in the fatty tissue. There's some there, certainly. But a lot of those lipophilic organics are deposited because of a process called loading, where the little fish eat these PCBs and other organics, and then it deposits in their tissue. And the big fish eat the little fish, and it deposits in the big fish tissue, and they never get rid of it. It just keeps building throughout their life cycle. So if you're out in the open ocean catching big old fish, top of the food chain predator fish, things like sharks and the billfish, those fish can be more and more loaded with those organic compounds like PCBs that get into the fish. So it's something that you tend to want to avoid. It's not really a good thing to eat an awful lot of swordfish because they tend to concentrate those pollutants. In aquaculture, we don't make old fish. We generally supply young, small fish. Even if those pollutants are available, they don't load into the tissue of the fish like would happen in the open ocean. So farmed fish, I think, always a better choice than wild. Although, once again, in general, none of the fish that you eat are all that bad for you. Now, there may be some exceptions, particularly with mercury. That's something to be a little concerned about. For the very young, the very old, that can cause a problem. But because in a farmed situation, we have control of the water quality, we have control of the food, basically we have control of every stage of that fish's life, we can keep those toxins from getting in the fish and provide a very safe, healthful, nutritious product to be eaten by people.
Choosing your fish, it's a matter of looking at not only what perhaps might be some contaminant level in a fish, but balancing that off with what are the beneficial aspects of fish. I think that's where we've come over the last 10 years or so, that we've really advanced in looking at the beneficial aspects of fish and then looking at certain fish that have high omega-3 fatty acid content in them and low mercury concentration. So when we see fish consumption advisories put out on a state level or on a national level, we're starting to see a little bit more of balancing the beneficial effects of fish and choosing wisely when you choose fish, whether it's at a restaurant or at a fish store, find the most beneficial fish that you might want to eat.
Walleye are a favored food fish in the upper Midwest and command a fairly high market value, but they really haven't been grown as a food product. Most walleye production goes for stocking into the lakes for sport fishery rather than for commercial food. And one of the reasons is that walleye tend to grow fairly slowly. Generally, to get what would be considered a market-sized fish is at least 3 years before you'd go from egg to plate. Well, one of the things we worked on back then and that we're still working on is making a hybrid walleye, a cross between a walleye and a sauger. And this fish grows about four times faster than a normal walleye will. It accepts diets very well. It is fairly good in culture. Walleyes in general tend to be a rather jumpy fish. They have a high stress response, and so they don't do well when they're in a tank. But the hybrids seem to take tank culture very well. They're fairly relaxed, and they grow fairly quickly. Some of the fish we're working with up at our Bayfield facility, we can go from egg to plate in about 8 months. And that's pretty good. That's faster than commercial rainbow trout will get to market size. It's a very high quality product. Now, one of the things that people are used to with walleye is seeing big fillets, big fish. You know, that market size fish used to be considered maybe a 3 pound fish. Well, that's probably not ideal for commercial production. And we've been very successful getting fish up to about a pound and a half. And that makes an ideal serving size for the restaurants. They would rather see more smaller fillets than one big slab of fish. It just looks like more on the plate. It's more attractive. They get to sell more breading. It looks like you're getting more for your dollar. And so it's something that restaurant industry is like to see. And we've been quite successful with preparing these walleyes for a number of workshops that we've had. And now in the past couple of years, the hybrid walleyes have gotten out to the farms, and we're fairly proud of that. One of the things that we do as an extension program is transfer that technology, to take the things that we learn in the laboratory and get it to work on the farm. This has been one of our success stories and continues to be. We have a number of farmers that are currently growing the hybrid walleye. We still have some bottlenecks to face, certainly. One of the things is broodstock. We have a walleye broodstock. A sauger broodstock is a little more difficult to find. Not many hatcheries around the country are purposely growing sauger. They're a riverine or a river-run cousin of the walleye. And in culture, the reality is that sauger are very, very cannibalistic. So they're very, very difficult to raise.
One of the projects we've been working on most recently is a sauguy project. We raise the fish from the time they hatch at the warmest temperatures that they'll accept. So we raise them at an elevated temperature, and we've also been able to use a variety of techniques in the tank, such as making very turbid water, that is cloudy water, also raising them at high densities in the tank. Very young walleye have a very hard time inflating their swim bladder, and if they can't inflate the swim bladder, they can't regulate where they are in the tank. So they either all float to the surface or sink to the bottom, which doesn't put them in the same place as the food. So we've used a variety of surface sprayers, kind of like garden sprayers. If you spray the surface of the water, it helps the fish to inflate their swim bladders. And it also helps them, therefore, to locate food. So we kind of raise the temperatures, we make the water a little cloudy. The reason we do that is it provides a contrast so that the fish can easily see their food in the tanks. Most food that young fish eat is kind of transparent. So if your food's invisible, how do you find it? Well, you make the environment cloudy, and suddenly they show up as a contrast to the background. Also, one of the other facts about walleye that they're notorious for is that they're highly cannibalistic. So you crowd them in a tank, and they're more likely to turn around and eat their brother and sister than they are to eat the food that you're putting into it. Well, the cloudiness also makes it hard for them to see their brothers and sisters. They don't see them as often, and they eat the food that lands in front of them instead of the other fish that are in the tank. So we do those things. The other, of course, is keeping them in tanks, not putting them out into ponds. We can keep them at those elevated temperatures. And if you control all those conditions, they survive better, they eat more, they grow faster, and we can rush them to that 9 or 10 month growth period so that they will be ready for harvest within that time frame.
Do you worry about things like mercury or PCBs from fish raised with aquaculture?
Just because a fish is raised in aquaculture doesn't mean it's totally contaminant free. When you look at how fish accumulate a contaminant, their main source of that contaminant is usually the food. So when we see in a remote lake in northern Wisconsin, we see a high concentration of mercury in a top predator fish, like a walleye or a muskellunge, it's because they've also eaten smaller fish that also bioaccumulate mercury. So you are what you eat, basically, from a contaminant level. As long as we are certain that the food that we give fish raised in aquaculture is low in contaminants, then we can assume that the fish themselves are going to be low. I think some of the exciting advances that are being made now in aquaculture are those that have non-fish meal as part of their diet, because then you totally eliminate the contaminants that you would typically get if you switch to something like a soy-based product or something like that. Most fish food is fish, and that fish comes from certain areas, so you have to make sure that the fish food is equally as clean.
Now, that sounds pretty easy. Substitute something like a herring or a menhaden that's in a fish food and instead put in some corn or soybeans. Sounds easy in principle, but the fact is that you're taking fish such as a walleye or maybe an Arctic char that's a carnivore, and its natural diet is other fish, and you're trying to turn it into a vegetarian. And you're trying to do it overnight. It's just not going to happen that easily. So I think there's a lot of research that's going to have to go into shifting towards plant-based foods for feeding fish, but trying to put additives of certain types of maybe flavor enhancers or attractants to slowly transition some of these carnivores into a more of a plant-based diet. And again, I don't think we're going to get to the point where it's 100% plant meal, but I think we're going to have to decrease the amount of fish that are in these fish diets because we're just running out of those fish to add to it. Go to a supermarket and take a look at the seafood counter. Ask the people who are behind the counter, where is the country that these fish come from? Even in Stevens Point, when I do that, more than 50% of the fish at supermarkets come from foreign countries. Really, you just have to look at any of the reports that have come out when it comes to contaminants, antibiotics, hormones, abuse of the land. It's all non-sustainable aquaculture that's being done in most foreign countries. If I go to a supermarket and see that those fish come from some of those foreign countries, I won't buy it because I won't eat it. U.S. aquaculture is generally highly regulated. And because of that, what you can add to the water, whether if it's a hormone or antibiotic, is very limited and it's under controlled conditions. And most of the time, it's actually not added. So the fish tend to be grown sustainably and then also of a better quality. Of course, you may find it at the supermarket, they go for a little higher price, but for me, it's worth spending that extra amount. From my perspective, in terms of research and education, there's a lot of different species of fish that can be, I think, tried, and that's what I like to do, is to try different species or maybe different culture techniques for those fish to see if we can bring a different species to the market or raise it more economically. Some of the fish we're looking at here, you know, yellow perch traditionally were caught in the Great Lakes, but their stocks are certainly at lower levels. So if people want to eat perch, farm-raised fish is what they're going to have to look towards. The hybrid walleye that we're doing, walleye have been around at supermarkets or restaurants in small quantities. They're all wild-caught fish. But if you can raise them in some culture conditions, you can probably control and prevent things such as maybe mercury contamination. Away from the farm, but just as important, is the U.S.'s food markets getting flooded by these foreign imports. And unfortunately, what's being found is that many of them are mislabeled. So you may go and say, oh, I'm going to eat those perch. I'm going to eat those walleye or even catfish. And a lot of those aren't even walleye or catfish or perch that are being imported into the U.S. They're just being labeled that. So I think consumers need to be educated as well so that they actually know what it is that they're buying. My bias a little is at least you know what's being raised in the U.S., what it really is and how it's being raised. There's going to be a stronger import regulation by the U.S. to take a look at these foreign imports more closely, inspect them, and make sure we know what's actually coming into the U.S. markets and what people are eating.
Aquaculture now is making a movement towards contained, recirculated indoor systems where they can control many of the aspects of the food and what we call now biosecurity. You try to keep it contaminant-free. It's a big movement, and I think it's great that as we're thinking of expanding an industry, we're also thinking about the contaminants and how to make things as clean as possible.
This just in part because of widespread news coverage of a 2004 study that found raised levels of organic contaminants in farm-raised Atlantic salmon and the subsequent public debate sparked by this, UWC Grant recently funded a project that examined the sources and concentrations of mercury in several facilities rearing yellow perch and rainbow trout. These facilities included three different rearing methods: groundwater flow-through ponds, recirculating tanks, and recirculating aquaponic systems. By the time the fish were harvested, mercury concentrations in these farm-raised yellow perch and rainbow trout were well below health advisory limits and did not vary significantly between rearing systems used or between species examined. Results from this work suggest that mercury contamination should not be a concern for consumers of Midwestern cultured yellow perch and rainbow trout, and this is likely true for other cool water fish raised in the region.
So I'm looking at my broiled walleye. It has a nice paprika coating served with a slice of lemon and a little bit of tartar sauce on the side. So we're going to sign off and enjoy a Friday night fish fry, but we'll be back.
This recording was produced by Chris Bocast for the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute, 2012. Thanks for listening.